Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 8th day of 2022, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Oh, and give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. So the widely used malware Zloader crops up in all sorts of criminal hacking, from efforts that aim to steal banking passwords and other sensitive data to ransomware attacks. Now a Zloader campaign that began in November has infected many thousands of victims in over 100 countries by abusing a Windows flaw that Microsoft fixed back in 2013. The attackers took advantage of a gap in Microsoft's signature verification, the integrity check that ensures that a file is legitimate and trustworthy. First, they tricked victims into installing a legitimate remote IT management tool called Aetera to gain access and device control. That part's not particularly surprising or novel, or in fact, not particularly hard to do. From there, though, the attacker still needed to install Zloader without Windows Defender or another malware scanner detecting or blocking it. This is where the nearly decade-old flaw came in handy. Attackers could modify a legitimate dynamic link library file, a common file shared between multiple pieces of software to load code, to plant their malware. The target DLL file is digitally signed by Microsoft, which proves its authenticity. But attackers were able to inconspicuously append a malicious script to the file without impacting Microsoft's stamp of approval. Microsoft calls its code signing process Authenticode. It released a fix in 2013 that made Authenticode signature verification stricter to flag files that have been subtly manipulated in this way. Originally, the patch was going to be pushed out to all Windows users, but in July 2014, Microsoft revised its plan, making the update optional because it would slow down Windows.
Can't have that. It's slow enough already.
Exactly. In a statement at Wednesday, Microsoft emphasized that users can protect themselves with a fix the company released in 2013. So the fix is out there and has been for all this time, but many Windows devices likely don't have it enabled, since users and systems administrators would need to know about the patch and then choose to set it up. Microsoft noted in 2013 that the vulnerability was being actively exploited by hackers in targeted attacks. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is hack from 2013 is back. And your choices are, I've already installed the patch. I'll install it today. I have no idea how to install it. Going commando, baby. Windows. And, of course, other. Currently, we have 18 votes. Our last vote just came in from Eugene, Oregon.
Ooh, cool.
So far, Windows. Windows has the absolute most number of votes by far. But you can vote in the poll. And, of course, if you have more to say, and I know you people, you do, you can head on over to our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. The second forum down is the poll, and you'll see the forums. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussions is 8 Jan 22. Hack from 2013 is back, and you can leave a comment there. And of course, and I know this comes as a shock to you, but you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. 0415.
So that means there are a significant number of computers that still have not been updated in almost 10 years.
Yes.
For this patch.
Mm-hmm. And it's every version of Windows.
Yep.
I mean, think about it. It's 9 years old.
Yeah.
What were you using 9 years? Well, for some of you, it's the same operating system you're using now. But for the rest of us, even though we've upgraded, it is that vulnerability is still there. So Steve is going to post a link to the Microsoft Knowledge Base article, and you can download that patch and install it. It is an optional patch. You know, keeping your system secure is optional, obviously, for many of you. And this is every version of Windows, including servers. So those of you who are systems administrators listening in, if you have not installed this patch, and how could you when you didn't know it existed, it is an optional patch, and a lot of people don't install optional patches because they assume that optional patches are for edge cases.
They're options. They're optional. Options. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, if you are running any sort of, if you are a systems administrator, and here's a hint, if you're running a system, you're the systems administrator. If you have a laptop, you are the systems administrator. If you have a desktop, a tablet, a phone, you are the systems administrator of that device. So it's not just people who run giant server rooms somewhere. It's all of us. You need to install this patch to be sure you're safe. Now, again.
And this is marked critical now.
Yeah, it's critical. Yeah.
So in 2019, they upgraded it to critical instead of optional?
They upgraded it to critical and left it optional.
Ah.
That's how that works.
A critical flaw should not be, a fix for a critical flaw should not be optional.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. But it slows Windows down.
Yeah.
Now, 9 years ago, your systems were not that powerful.
Yeah.
So slowing it down was significantly more of a problem than it is today.
More of an issue and a concern.
Yeah. Are we keeping you up?
Yeah.
Not very well, apparently.
Well, gee, I got another story here for you. Due to Windows.
Microsoft Windows?
Yeah.
Has a problem?
I learned.
Get out of town.
Here's one that you might not know of.
Yeah?
All right. I got the new computer.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was setting it up to the latest version of Windows. And I learned that Windows, I forget the patch number, did away with workgroups.
Oh, yeah, they changed the name to something else.
Home group, is it?
Home group or something?
Don't work.
Really?
Not that I'm aware
of. You have to have a domain controller now.
Oh, excellent.
Well, I don't know. I'm looking, but yeah.
Well, the thing of it is it turned a number of my computers into media devices.
Great.
So if you click on it, before that was a net, you know, a computer that was on my network, you click on it, it comes up as a media devices, and it only shows two folders.
Pictures and music?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then you had to go in, I was reading some of the stuff, and you had to go into the services and then to functions. And there's two function things in the services, and you've got to set those to automatically start. And then go into your security and say discover, you know, on the network and everything else. And
originally they expected you to set up the work group on one computer and then copy the settings to a floppy drive, that floppy disk, and then go around to every other computer and install those settings.
Sneakernet.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so, but yeah, I'm still doing battle. Just trying to get all of them so I can get to the other computers if I want to do updates or move files over to other, because they pop up as a media.
Perfect.
And there is no.
How is that a problem? For heaven's sake, what's wrong with you?
Just trying to find a solution for it. I don't mind problems. I love trying to figure stuff out. But when they sit there and say, oh, yeah, we did away with that. With this patch, because and corporate line that they gave is such BS.
Oh,
because
yeah.
You know, I mean, work groups has been around for decades.
Right.
It goes all the way back to Windows 3.1. But you know, all of a sudden they do away with it. Why? Good reason, not some bull.
Right.
And like I said,
you sure you weren't running Windows S and not Windows Home?
I'm running Windows 10 Pro.
Pro. Pro should have domain controller and workgroup controller in it.
Yeah, it should.
It does. Yeah. But workgroups doesn't work. I went around, checked into it, and it's set to workgroups. And I'm trying to find out, all right, well, since you didn't do, you know, you did away with that, what's the fix? And I don't see any fix for it.
There's a network reset feature you can do, which will make it forget all its current network settings, so you can set up a new network and a new workgroup.
Well, that's nice, I suppose.
And that's from December of 2021 Windows 10 21H2. That's what I found, is it's impossible to get the latest version of Windows in one shot.
Right.
You download 21H2, and then you have to download all the updates that came out since then.
Right.
Not until 22H1 will they roll everything together again.
Right.
Which probably won't be out until March or April
at
of this year.
Best, if you're lucky. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Were we done?
Yeah, no, I was just saying, yeah, no, it'd be just nice, though, if I could find a solution. That you're wondering why I was yawning is I was up till almost midnight last night trying to resolve the dang issue. And it's like, really?
Yeah.
Oh, what a pain in the butt.
Yeah. All right, our first caller is Brent from Fairport, New York. Hiya, Brent. What's up?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a Chromebook question. I've got a little Chromebook that I've been using for a few years now. I really like it, but it's going to run out of automatic updates in about 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
And does that mean that if something goes wrong, I can't do a refresh on it either?
Oh, that's an excellent question. What you need to do immediately is to create a, what do they call it?
Recovery disk?
A recovery disk.
I've got that.
Okay, then you should be able to restore it to whenever you made the recovery disk.
Okay, all right.
So maybe, you know, after your last update, make another one.
All right. Now, I understand that one of the future problems may be that the browser isn't going to work with some websites.
Eventually, the security certificates will expire and not get updated, and you get crazy messes. On the Mac, it goes a little crazy. When the certificate expires, you get a malware warning.
Uh-huh.
And this file may damage your computer. No, the certificate just expired. Don't be so scary.
Right.
Okay.
It's still a problem, but don't be so scary.
Right.
Yeah. Now I'm also running a couple of Linux programs on it, and so could under Linux can I, for example, load Firefox?
Yes. Yes, you can.
So I could use that, and that should be kept up to date.
That should be kept up to date, yes. And in fact, I'm currently running Firefox myself at the moment. Not at the moment, but I have it on my machine. And a number of other Linux, excuse me, a number of other Linux programs that work just as well as, you know, the regular Chrome OS programs. And they do update, and they will continue to update.
Oh, that's good to know. You know, I was kind of thinking maybe to buy a new Chromebook, but there's a lot of them for sale that don't have a very longevity either.
Yeah.
I was even in a big box store the other day, and I was able to check, and it only went to 2024. So,
new,
you know, 2 years.
New devices should be 8 years.
Right, right.
So if they're selling one that's only got 2 years left on it, it's 6 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly. Okay. So I guess the advice is to, I know there are lists out with expiration dates for various models. It's probably best to check that before buying one.
And it doesn't necessarily mean it will quit working. It means it stops getting updates.
Right.
So it's dangerous to keep using it because you could get infected by something.
Okay. Well, I was also looking at low-cost PCs, but some of them come with Windows 11S now, which I thought was adding insult to injury.
The S I just mentioned with Dave.
We know what the S stands for.
Yeah, it's supposed to mean simple.
Ship.
You can only install apps from the Microsoft App Store, which makes it a little more secure, but tiny more secure.
Yeah.
But almost every app I want to install does not come from the Microsoft
That's
App Store.
Exactly right.
Right. Okay.
Including what? Revo Uninstaller and Malwarebytes.
Now those of us
spyware,
who, immediately wipe out Windows and install Linux. Love the cheap PCs.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they run super fast and super nice with Linux on them. But again, you have to be aware that some models are so cheap that the hardware in them is so old that even Linux doesn't have good drivers for it.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I just got that one off of Woot, and it's a Dell i5, 16 gig of memory, terabyte hard drive, and it was $375.
Yeah. Mine, okay. Mine was an i7, so it was $400. Yep. But it's the same idea.
Keyboard and mouse.
Another option is to install Cloud Ready, which will still give you basically the Chrome OS. It's Chromium. And they are supporting machines a little longer than Google does, but you have to make sure your machine is on their certified list.
Yeah, now, is that the same as Neverware?
Yes.
Yeah, Neverware is the company. Cloud Ready is the software.
But it's owned by Google now, right?
Yeah, they are part of...
When did that happen?
Yeah, the subsidiary that does Chrome.
December 2020.
Well, 2020.
Really?
Right, we're in 2022 now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah,
but anyway, yes, they are owned by Google. They are still out there. They are still actually...
Are they the N in Alphabet? Well, no, it says it's owned by Google, not Alphabet.
Right. I don't know. It's it's owned by the subsidiary that does Chrome, the section of Google that does Chrome.
Right, right. So I'm just, not to get too complicated, but if I install that on a Chromebook, I might run into the same problem later.
But later.
Depends on what Google does.
Neverware certifies their hardware for 13 years.
Right.
Okay. Right. Unless Google changes their mind for them.
And that's 13 years from when you install it.
Oh, that's different.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No, 13 years from the original release date.
Of that piece of software.
Of that piece of software,
right. So if you,
That's still a long time for a computer.
Right.
Yeah, long time for me.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Brent. Have fun.
Right.
And Happy New Year to all of you out there. For those of you who weren't listening last week, there must have been one of you. Happy New Year.
Yeah.
It's a brand new year. We actually have snow on the ground.
Shut up.
Sorry.
I had to shovel it. I had to brush my car off twice today.
Yeah. Twice?
Once when I left home and once when I left for here.
Oh, yeah.
I hope I don't have to brush it off when I leave here, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah, no, that seems... Matter of fact, I think it's supposed to go up in the 40s.
Tomorrow, yeah.
One of these days coming up, yeah.
It's up to 22 now, according to my watch.
Mine says 19. You're clearly a little farther south than I am.
We'll have to see what the official Jazz 90.1 weather is at...
coming up
bottom
soon.
Bottom of the hour, yeah.
The thing about computers is we want to keep them forever.
Yep.
And I do fully understand that. The problem with doing that is that the hardware eventually fails.
Yeah, that's
ain't no way around that, folks.
Yep.
The hardware eventually fails.
Just like light bulbs, they burn out.
Yep. But until then, your software can fail. One of the things I like about Linux is that if you can run Linux, it will continue to update until the day the hardware dies. I have some very old computers that are running the latest and greatest Linux.
Yep.
You want to have 2 gigs of RAM and blah 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 blah. But that's normal these days. I've got a couple. I still have a. I wish I could get it running. I have to do something with it one of these days. It's only got a half a meg of RAM. It should still run Puppy Linux or damn small Linux. But it's this tiny little thing that you could just slip into a pocket.
Wow.
It's really pretty cool. Anyway.
Apple recently extended their support a little bit for certain models. So typically all Mac computers are supported for 8 years. For some models, they extended it to 10 years for simple things like batteries and hard drives. Because that's typically what dies when they get that old.
Right.
But still, I had one this week. We had a 10-year-old computer come in, and they wanted to spend several hundred dollars upgrading the RAM and putting an SSD in and upgrading the OS. For not much more, you could get a brand new computer. Oh, I love this computer. Oh, okay.
Right.
But it's sometimes hard to see them put that much money into such an old thing.
Right. One of the things I do like is that Linux now runs on M1s.
Oh, nice.
So if you really need to extend the life of
They probably just did the ARM Linux.
All right. I got a question for you. Because I've got an old computer, and I'm getting so frustrated with Windows. Well, after this one, I mean, I sat there the night before and installing all this stuff, wound up doing a restart on me, and all of a sudden installing some other stuff that I didn't realize that it was going to do, an update, and it more or less bricked what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I had to start all over again, do a recovery, and all those hours of work that I had done installing these programs was gone. Didn't even give me the option of whether I wanted to install the update. It just did it. And that really ticked me off because also with the newer version of Windows, one of my older programs that I use, it's called COM0COM, and you can create these virtual ports. Windows 11 doesn't like, or 10 doesn't like it because of the signature. So you have to go into the boot part, and there's a boot verification option, I think there's. I had to turn that off.
Probably secure boot or trusted platform boot.
Yeah, and I had to turn that off, and then it works.
Interesting.
Yeah, Windows, like I say, they think they know better on how you want to run your machine regardless.
Excuse me. It's not your machine. It's Microsoft's machine, you're just using it.
Well, then when they give me the $375 that I paid for it.
Yeah, that's the point. It's your machine. It's their software, and they do what they want.
Well, that's why I want to look. What would you recommend somebody just getting into Linux or Unix and want to take Windows off and learn that looks Windows-like?
PC Linux OS
PC Linux
is one. Zorin is another, although, okay, I just installed Zorin on a machine and it is very slow. But then again, I installed it on one of my oldest laptops. So
PC Linux?
PC Linux OS.
.com.
.com is where you get it.
Yep.
Okay.
However, if you like your Raspberry Pis, their front end is called LXDE. That's the name of the GUI. And you get that with Lubuntu.
Okay.
So if you were to install the version of Ubuntu from Lubuntu.me, Lubuntu, I guess, you would get essentially the look of a Raspberry Pi.
Okay.
But with PC Linux OS and with Zorin, and I'm sure there are half a dozen others, and people are going to be telling us you've missed the best one. You'll find. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Go ahead. Finish your statement. Yeah.
You'll find that it's got the thing in the lower left corner, and it comes up with a menu, and it does all basically the same idea. All right, we're going to take a quick break. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. If you're not on the line, give us a call. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Judy from Webster, New York, waiting patiently on the line. Hi, Judy. What's up?
Good afternoon. First of all, Happy New Year. Thank you for your program, and I am a member.
Hey, Happy New Year to you too, Judy, and thank you for being a member. What's up?
Well, I recently had my computer in for service, and they always make you sign a document about losing programs, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, I used to have CC Cleaner and another program that would clean my computer. The CC is still there, but the other program isn't, and I can't remember what it was. So I'm looking for a new free version of something.
To do what?
What are you trying to clean?
Yeah, what are you trying to accomplish?
It used to scan my computer. It used to scan my files and then list all the junk and then say delete.
Oh, that never trust any of those. They have no idea what you think junk is, and they have no way of deleting the right files.
So okay. I mean, I have WebRoot on my computer.
That's an antivirus. That's good.
Yeah, here's...
You probably want to run an anti-malware program like Malwarebytes.
Yep. And if you're trying to look for junk files or clean up stuff, one program that we've recommended for a long time is Revo Uninstaller.
Yeah, if you have leftover programs you don't use anymore, then Revo can uninstall them properly.
And when you go to uninstall it, Revo does a much better job than Windows as far as uninstalling. Because all Windows does is turn off one bit and then it doesn't appear. The files and everything else are still there in the registry, cluttering up stuff and slowing down your machine. If you use something like Revo and you want to get rid of, say, a program, it will totally remove all the subdirectories. Anything in the registry and keep your machine running clean and slim.
I used to have that on the machine. I wonder if I still do, actually.
All right, good.
Well, that's the
one that I would recommend.
There's also a lot of fake cleaning programs that claim to be able to clean junk like that, but they don't do anything, or worse, they introduce more problems and try to get you to pay for fake services.
Right.
So that may have been what got removed also.
Well, the one I had was a free program. I've had it for a couple of years at least, and it always did a decent job. And
Was it Revo?
No. No, it was something else. But I do have Revo on my desktop.
Yeah, that's good to.
That's
to
one I would recommend.
Uninstall programs you don't use anymore, and then Malwarebytes is a very good anti-malware program. The free version you run yourself, and the pay version will run automatically.
Same with Super and Spyware.
Same with Super Anti Spyware. Yeah.
So there is a free version of that.
Yep.
And what's the website? Can you tell me?
Malwarebytes.com. I can post another link in our link list as well.
Okay.
Oh, they're having a 25% off sale today.
Nice.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yep.
Have fun, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Bye-bye.
So, yeah, look, we talk all the time about, you know, free versus pay, and believe me, I get it. Free is, particularly these days, way better. But if you can see your way clear to pay for software, A, it encourages them to continue to make that software and to improve it. That's a beautiful thing.
Yep.
But in addition, you often get features that make life easier. For example, as Steve said, with Malwarebytes, you have to run the free version by hand, but the pay version will run automatically, so you don't have to think about it anymore.
And the pay version is only $40 a year.
Right.
And less for multiple devices.
Right. And they're
having, less per device for multiple devices.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Bob. What's up?
Oh, good afternoon. Suggestion for whichever one of you guys, I didn't get it clearly, but one of you guys is having a problem with Windows file sharing on Windows 10.
Yeah, that was Dave.
Okay. If you go into Control Panel, Network and Sharing Center, and then down the left, there's Change Advanced Sharing Settings.
Already done it.
Yeah. It's not file sharing itself. It's Windows thinks it's a media device, not
right.
A computer.
And the other thing they tell you to do is also go into Services, and yep. Under Functions, change those to, there's two function things in the services, and they tell you to go in, select both of those, right click on those, and change those to automatic.
Yeah, for some, well, some reason it's not seeing it as a computer.
You're talking about media streaming options, but down the left in network and sharing, if you can find it, they keep moving it.
Yeah. No, I've already done that.
Well, it was just an idea because once I turn that back on, sharing works fine on my network. No, I will grant that there is a Samba file server on the same network, so that might be handling browsing.
Well, the other thing they said, though, is the thing of it is if you had an older version of Windows and have done the patches, it'll still remember workgroups. But if you get a new computer in, that won't.
This was a new computer. The main computer here that I work from and I share from, if I'm sharing from a Windows machine, was new with Windows 10 on it.
Yeah, how long ago?
Oh, 2017.
Yeah, no, you're good there. Yeah, no, I'm saying anything right today. If you buy anything this year with the new, the latest and greatest version of Windows installed, it won't work with workgroups anymore. Windows has, Microsoft has taken workgroups out of the program. They've gave a corporate line of, well, you know, this and that, and but no solution on how to do it. And, you know, and a few folks have, because what it'll do is your other devices on the network turn to media devices. I have a NAS drive hanging off my network, right sitting right on top of my controller. My switch, and all the computers think that it's a media device now instead of a storage device, which is 2 terabytes.
Well, Windows sees a whole bunch of that stuff, but I've never had a problem. I go in, there's a place you can still set your workgroup name.
Oh, yeah, but like I say, if you get any of the newer versions of Windows, it's not going to work anymore because it's after that patch. What was it, 1803 patch?
Well, 1803 turned off home group.
Yeah.
But maybe it was the 21H2 that turned off work group.
1803 also, removed home group, right.
Well, it works, and I just tried to make a suggestion.
Yeah, well, we appreciate that. Thank you very much. What happens is you may have set up a basic peer-to-peer work group. And if you did that, it'll work again. But when you try to do it through real networking, it does not. So if you run it as a basic peer-to-peer work group with public file sharing and permissions set up, it will continue to work correctly, the way it used to.
Correctly,
right. It'll continue to work the way it used to. But
I'm sorry, say that again?
I said if you set it up as a basic peer-to-peer networking group with file sharing and permission, public file sharing and permissions, then it continues to look like you want it to look.
Where would I set that up? In the control
panel, yeah.
Control panel system?
Yeah. I've got
So what may be happening is it's remembering the media type. And so even though you've set your workgroup settings properly, it still remembers it's a media type. So I found a link to delete the shortcuts so it can build new shortcuts of your network devices.
All right, send that to me, please.
Yeah. That's crazy.
So
I don't mind, same thing in Apple World, I don't mind them adding new features, but stop removing old things we're used to using.
For decades.
Yeah. Unless there's something egregiously wrong with it, and there wasn't.
Do you have a screenshot of what you're talking about, Nick?
I've got a link here.
All right, could you send me that link?
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Because like I say, it's just... And because I'll post it on some of the other places that I've been talking to folks, you know, trying to resolve this issue. And it's like, you know, Microsoft, like I say, they don't, they take a feature out, but don't realize that folks have probably been doing this in home networks and small businesses for a long time. And all of a sudden, just to do away with it and not give you a solution or a workaround is a major pain in the butt. Because, you know, have folks come in.
They didn't
and,
offer us to sell you a Windows Server? That's the solution.
I've got a Windows Server, my old one. I mean, I could turn it back on, but I don't know.
Yeah, usually Windows Server handles that type of communication between the different devices.
Right.
But home users shouldn't need to buy a server.
Yeah. No. It's just a simple home network, you know, sharing files between computers. And like I say, all of a sudden it changes and boom. All right. We got another caller.
All right. You got to, I can't do four things at once.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, this may come as a shock to you.
Really? You're sloughing off again.
You're stuck at three?
Yeah, I'm stuck at three.
But no, just to be aware, folks, like I say.
You sure this is Windows 10, not Windows 11?
Windows 10.
Wow.
Yeah. Because,
even though there's nothing different.
That's one thing. Well, that's one thing, though, I refuse. Matter of fact, a couple of my computers, even the wife, they wanted to go to Windows 11. And I said, yeah, no, thank you. I'm not going to be this pioneer.
Yeah.
You're right.
I don't need any more arrows or frustrations or the wife getting ticked off.
Well, there's the big one right there.
Because the thing ain't working right.
Having a problem is one thing. Having a problem with your wife breathing down your neck is an entirely separate thing.
Yeah. And no. We want to sleep with both eyes closed.
That's exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. Hi, Fred. What's up?
Hey, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Hey, I don't have all those problems that you guys have. I can sleep with both eyes closed.
There you go.
I have three things that I'd like to talk to you about today. One is the previous caller brought up a cleaning device, cleaning software, and you had mentioned about it not being great. I have Avast on my Android phone. I have both paid programs, the mobile security and the Avast cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
Are they safe and are the cleaners safe and good?
Well, yes. Avast itself is a very well known, very good product. The thing about any cleaner is don't trust it.
Mm.
You know, don't just automatically say, yeah, go do your thing. Leave me alone. Take a look at each thing it wants to do something with, figure out what it wants to do. And decide yay or nay individually.
Yeah, I don't see where it allows me to see all that except if I'm looking at files, downloads.
Right. That's what I'm talking about.
Those. But all the stuff that's you know, it clears out cache, it clears out what it calls junk files.
Right. No, that's separate. I'm talking about, you know, when it wants to delete a file or a program.
Gotcha. Okay.
You pay attention.
Okay, so I have a question about the newsletter, if this is inappropriate.
No, go ahead. Okay. Let me preface this by saying that I put out a weekly newsletter. You can sign up for it at AskNick.com. It's only $25 a year, cheap at half the price. So go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I joined last August.
Thank you.
And I got a notice just the other day that it was automatically updated and took the $25 from a credit card, which I didn't realize that it was would renew at the beginning of the year.
Well, yeah, when you bought it last year, auto renew was turned on, and we always forget about it.
Yeah, we always do. Yeah. If you joined last August,
yeah,
Fred, send me an email.
Okay.
And with your full name. I don't want you to give it over the air.
Right, okay.
Send me an email and remind me of this, and I will look up to see if indeed you joined last August. You shouldn't get an upgrade notice until this August.
Okay, and then the other issue is can I go in and change the card that it is linked to?
Again, send me your add that as a question to your email, and I will answer both of those off the air.
Okay. So I have a comment about Zoom.
Yeah.
I'm fairly new to the Zoom world. I'm not the neatest of housekeepers, so I want to use a virtual background. And I looked at Zoom, and I had a button, translucent button in the screen that was a settings type link. and I was looking at some backgrounds, and I could do that as a test. I had a real majestic looking horse that was a good background, except the Zoom put me under the horse.
Yeah, you can't control where you are in the virtual background.
So I was looking for other pictures that were more appropriate, and I, you know, went back to the without background. And then when I went back to it again, I couldn't find the button. I couldn't find the, and I contacted Zoom. Zoom said it's a Samsung device issue. Samsung says it's a Zoom issue.
Oh, this is on a phone, not a computer?
Right.
Okay.
So I went back and forth with people. Zoom sent me the requirements. I sent those to the guy at Samsung, and he tells me, oh, I got to buy a different phone. And I went, well, wait a minute, but I had it on there. It was there. Where did it go? So I was playing around with things, and I have Duo, which I've never used, but it's on the phone. And I looked, and I'm going, it's got backgrounds.
Yep.
So I went through settings, and I went through, you know, every setting option has a subcategory, which has a subcategory, which has a subcategory.
Right.
And you go through myriad and then try to keep track of where I left off. I did find in the advanced setting that there's a Zoom, or not a Zoom, but a video call feature.
In Duo?
There's a button. No, in my phone settings.
Nice. Yeah, of course, yeah.
I have a Samsung Galaxy A32, which according to Zoom people, those tech people there said that phone can't do Zoom backgrounds, but evidently installed on my phone, not a Zoom feature, but installed on my phone is a background video effects or
right
video call effects.
Yeah, that's a part of the new version of Android. It actually uses Duo, which does do backgrounds.
Yeah, and so none of those people knew it. The phone carrier didn't know it. The Samsung people didn't know it.
You were asking about Zoom. That has nothing to do with Zoom.
Right.
Right, but it works in Zoom.
Oh, yep, that background works in Zoom? Nice.
Yeah, the button reappeared.
There's supposed to be a more button to bring up options for the Zoom call.
Yeah, and there's nothing in there about backgrounds on the more button.
Interesting.
So it actually comes up just like the Duo. It comes up as a translucent button on the view screen as I'm looking at myself in the, you know, setting up a call.
Right.
And I click on that, and it gives me those options to use a background, which, like I said, Samsung people and Zoom people told me I couldn't do.
Right.
So. And for the listeners that have that phone and want that option, it is there, even though everybody tells you it's not.
Interesting.
They don't know their own product, which is frustrating.
good to know. Thank you.
Yep. So, with that said, I'll send you to the Nick at.
Yeah, Nick at AskNick.com is fine, that's fine.
Okay. All right, I'll send that out.
Perfect.
I think I sent something with an Ask Nick link, but
yesterday was a very bad day, and the week has been very bad. So I have not looked at all my email the last few days. So if you sent it over the last few days, I probably haven't seen it yet.
Okay. Now when I ask a question through that forum, obviously you couldn't possibly answer every question.
Well, I try to. The way it works is because essentially this is replacing the column I had in the newspaper.
Right.
So I do it once a week, and I answer questions as they come in order.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. If I haven't gotten to your question yet, or sometimes I skip ahead because there's like a theme.
Right,
you know,
right,
if I have two questions about Chromebooks, I try to answer both of those.
Or something relevant.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So yeah, I did take the poll, and as it's the update is not a problem for me.
Good.
Because I don't have anything that's Microsoft. Bye bye.
Nice. Oh, nice.
That's one way to fix it.
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, thank you guys so very much, and have a great rest of your weekend, and keep up the good work.
You too. Have fun.
All right. Thanks. Bye bye.
We should probably mention as a word of caution, Norton 360, a very popular antivirus software, which owns AVG and owns Avast and owns most other of the smaller AV companies. So far, it's only the Norton 360 product. They have shipped it with a crypto miner.
Yeah, I was going to mention that.
Yeah, so in your computer's idle time, it is mining for cryptocurrency, slowing your computer down. And Norton will take a 15% cut of whatever it makes. But the internet's going crazy that Norton should find crypto miners and remove them from your computer because they're usually bad things and you don't know where they're coming from. So I guess now we know where this one's coming from. But you don't need your computer hijacked by another company doing something.
If I wanted to spend my resources and my electricity, crypto mining, I would do it for myself
and not give a cut to anyone.
I don't need to be part of that Ponzi scheme, but yeah. If I did, that's how I would do it myself. But having Avast take over my machine,
mm-hmm.
and mine crypto and charge me a 15% fee to do that.
Yep. They should be paying you if they're doing
that. That's exactly
apparently
right.
They started doing this in July of 2021, but nobody noticed.
Right.
Until this week when Cory Doctorow at Boing Boing pointed it out.
Right.
So now the internet's going crazy.
And well, it should, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Dave, I just sent you that link. That's me.
Oh, okay. Super. Thank you very much.
Yep. Yep.
And typical Cory fashion, you know, explicitive filled tweet about how bad.
Yeah, he's not really safe for work.
No. He writes some really nice stories, though.
He really does, but he is not. They're not safe for work. But yeah, so if
just,
you are
I
using.
I just stop reading Boing Boing at work, too.
Yeah. If you are using Avast, I don't think you can turn it off. I don't think you can opt out.
Well, in the article, so Brian Krebs is also doing an article on it, too. They say it's opt in, but people have noticed it's running without them opting in.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you are using Avast.
Norton 360.
Excuse me, Norton 360. What did I say? Avast. Norton, if you're using Norton, this might be the time to not use Norton. Find something else. All right. That music tells us we have wasted an hour of our lives together. It was pleasant, but it's over. But don't worry, because shortly there will be a whole nother hour we can all waste together. But in between that, we are going to take a short break. Those of you who wish to take a bio break will have plenty of time to do so. But we will be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you for a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Give us a call, and we will all chit-chat together about computers. What better way to spend a cold, snowy Saturday in January in Rochester, New York? See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites,
mm-hmm.
right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Okay, here's the thing that makes me angry.
Hey.
They've put the Kensington lock right next, not on this one, but on a lot of them, they put the Kensington lock right next to the USB-C port.
So
I spend about half my time trying to plug into the Kensington lock, which is just, at least it's the tiniest micromillimeter shorter.
Yeah.
But it makes me angry.
Pain in the butt.
I had trouble this morning trying to find out why my computer wasn't joining the network properly that I was testing.
Yeah.
And then realized I had plugged the the USB into the Ethernet jack. I usually say the plugs only work in the one they fit in.
Yeah.
But USB-A will just barely fit into Ethernet if you're not too picky about how tight it is.
Yeah, exactly. But we were talking about various Linux distributions, and we were talking about Zorin Linux, which is a fairly new one. I have, like I said, I'm running it on essentially a Pentium, so it's very slow, but it looks quite lovely and works great. I should probably install it on a VM just to see.
It's like an old 486, folks.
Yeah, exactly. So it's got, I'm running it on 4 gig of RAM, but it's a slow processor.
Yeah. You're not looking to do gaming.
Right. And apparently it does have touchscreen support. Apparently setting up is not as easy as you'd like it to be, but it's possible. The interesting thing about Linux.
Is that Zorin with an X or a Z?
Is a Z.
C, sorry. Yeah.
There are many, many user interfaces for Linux. And the beauty of it, of course, is that you can change them.
Yep.
If you don't like one, try another. They're all installable and switchable, and it's a pretty amazing process. You just say, "Oh, I want to try this one now," and then one of the things you install is the switcher, and you bring up the switcher and say, "Okay, I'm tired of XFCE, let's try KDE," or "I'm tired of KDE, let's try GNOME," or whatever. And it's really, and then of course you have to reboot. Yeah, that obviously makes a certain amount of sense, but, you do that and then you're in the other one. And if you don't like it, you go back and it's all pretty easy. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. So I've got a problem. I had a all-in-one Brother laser printer hooked up to our system for quite a long time. And it's a model 7860DW. It's a rather common type of printer that Brother makes. They made other versions of it. They all look pretty much the same. So my computer is a Windows 10 machine. And recently my son, unbeknownst to me, installed a new router. And ever since then I haven't had access to the printer. I couldn't find it. So I'm trying to reinstall it. When I go into the control panel, select printers and scanners.
It's not your computer's problem. It's a printer problem.
Right.
You have to go to the printer control panel and tell it to join the new Wi-Fi network.
Now, I've done that. I entered the SSID and everything, and it does. After I complete that, the printer spits out a sheet of paper saying, that it's been done, that you're now connected. But it's still, I can't see it on my computer.
All right, the first thing to do is to log into the router itself, which you can do from your web browser.
Okay.
Log into that, and almost every router has one place where you can go and see a list of all the attached devices. Make sure the printer is there.
Right. Actually, we did that already. My son did that, and the printer was not there.
Then you did not properly join the network. Even though it thinks it joined the network, it did not. And until you do that, no machine will be able to see it.
You have to make sure you join the private network, not the guest network.
Right.
Because guest networks are designed not to show other devices.
Okay. The private. So it's showing the private network. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Most routers also allow you to set up two basically separate networks. Your personal or private or internal network, and then a guest network. So if somebody comes over, they can connect to the guest network without accessing any of your servers or other computers or anything.
Yeah.
Okay. Including, you know, the printer. And it works both ways. You can't access them. They can't access you. So if you're on one network, the printer's on the other network, you can get to it. But there are so many hoops you have to jump through. It's just easier to go back into the printer and say, join the right network.
Okay, so that's the issue, is that the printer was not connecting to the correct network.
Yeah. There may be an option in the printer to reset all network settings, and that wouldn't be a bad idea to hit. So then you're setting up the printer networking from scratch rather than trying to change what's already there.
Right.
Right, right. Boy, there's a lot of bookkeeping involved in this, isn't there?
There really is. There's a lot more to running a computer than hitting the on switch. It just gets more and more complex the more and more stuff we try to attach.
Wasn't it nice when you had a company and there was someone to come and do that for you?
Exactly. I was that somebody.
I was that someone, yeah. So who do we call when there's a problem?
Yeah, Google, that's who we call. Yeah. But yeah, that it sounds at least like that's your problem. Until the router sees it, nothing else will be able to see it.
Okay. All right, well, yeah. Of course, if Apple made everything, there wouldn't be a problem with this, would there?
There might.
Yeah.
Go to Apple.
Well, that's another. Well, that should still be on. That's another setting. There are different protocols. One of the things about standards is there's so many of them to choose from. The printer may be designed for SMB for Windows machines. You need to turn on Bonjour or Rendezvous or AirPrint, whatever the printer calls it.
In the printer.
So that the Apple devices will see it, too.
Yeah.
But that should still be on if it used to work with your Apple devices.
Yeah, but you said it was a Windows 10 machine, right?
Yeah, I was just making a slightly comical remark.
Yeah, right.
One company. Yeah.
Yeah. If only one company made everything, theoretically it would all work together. Although Steve can attest to the fact that that doesn't always happen.
Yep.
Mm-mm.
If the router doesn't see it, nobody's going to see it. So make sure that you've got it set up correctly. Once the router sees it, other devices should be able to see it without a problem.
Okay. Well, thanks for the tips.
Yep. Have fun. That's something that still amuses me. It used to be very, very difficult to set up printers, and particularly in Linux.
Yeah.
You had to dance on one foot, sing show tunes.
And then Apple created AppleTalk. Where the printer said, hi, here I am, print to me.
Right.
And network administrators hated it because it put so much traffic on the network.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. But it made it finding the printer easier.
Yep. and in fact, what I've really, I continue to be, because I did that for many years, you're trying to get Linux to talk to printers. Now, when you install a version of Linux or you add a printer to the network, it just shows up like it's supposed to.
Yeah, now they call it zero config.
Right.
And printers are still publishing their existence, but not as often as they used to.
Yeah, one of the problems with auto-installing printers is they're alphabetical.
Mm-hmm.
So if you name yours with an A, everybody's going to print to it because they think it's their printer. Because it's the first one that shows up in the list.
The default.
Especially if you go to a company and every printer on everyone's desk is showing on my computer.
Yep.
I don't need any of those other ones.
Yep.
So you try to delete it and it just comes back because auto discovery's turned on.
Exactly.
Then you try to let me manage my printers themselves. Are you sure? Windows really would manage your printers for you better.
Yeah. No, thank you. I just want my printer. Thanks.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Batavia, New York. Hi, Mike.
Hi there, guys.
How are you holding up out there in Batavia?
Well, you were saying how gloomy and cold and everything, but it's beautiful here. So the sun's just not a cloud.
Okay, shut up, Mike. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Anyway, I'm going to buy a new monitor, okay? And I haven't bought one in years, you know what I mean? And one question, if you got any tips along those lines, that you know, I appreciate it. They have these curved monitors now, and I was wondering whether you had any experience with those, you know what I mean, especially with streaming, you know what I mean, if you get a couple of people watching it, limiting, you know what I mean, the scope. You know.
The best view is directly in the center, so anyone off to the edges isn't going to see things right.
It's really designed.
And if the content you're watching was designed for a curved monitor, then it would be good.
Gaming and that type of stuff.
Right. It's really designed for panoramic views of things, which is mostly gaming. Not all, but mostly gaming. If you're trying to share a, if you have more than one person sitting at a desk, you really curved screens are difficult. You know, if you've got one person on each side, the person on your left really only sees the right side. The person on the right only sees the left side. They have to start craning around. Everybody's got their heads close together. These days, that's not a good idea. So if you are a solitary person in a situation, so your home office or your cubicle or whatever, and you're the only person there and you're using a curved monitor and it's curved, it's big enough. I mean, you want a really large monitor.
We have a nice 38-inch in our display floor that's really nice when you're standing right in the center and you can see the everything wrap around.
Right. So your best bet would be to head out to somewhere like Mac Ave and take a look at that monitor and stand in front of it, stand to the side, actually give it a close look to see what that all looks like.
One of the sort of sneaky tricks a lot of monitor and display companies are doing now is giving you the size of the monitor but hiding the resolution of the monitor.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see something that says it's a 32-inch monitor. Oh, great. Yeah, but it's only 1024 by 768. So it's a really big screen with giant text on it.
Right, and your
chunky
pictures are the size of your thumbnail.
Yep. And so you can't see very much on the screen.
Right.
And so you want something at least 1024, well, 1920 by 1080 is HD. What we're seeing, a lot of the bigger monitors now are coming at 2K or 4K. The more pixels the screen has, the more information you can see on it. So the size, the inches of the screen doesn't matter as much as how
nice
many pixels 40 there
inch.
Are. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So yeah, generally speaking, Mike, you want to see it before you buy it. And you can certainly see them at Mac Ave.
And you want to also, is it a relatively new PC?
No, I was wondering
whether, you know, you got to also check, when you're looking at this, the connectors.
Yeah.
Does your computer have HDMI, DVI, or is it
VGA?
VGA.
USB-C is the newest one now.
More importantly, can your current video card drive that monitor?
So that goes back to the number of pixels. So if your video card can't drive a 4096 monitor, don't buy a 4K or get a new video card.
Right.
Okay.
So there's a bit more to it than you think.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye.
That's the one thing that's very different about a television versus a computer monitor. Television, you see the same information no matter how big the monitor is.
Right.
With a higher resolution monitor, you know, a 4K versus an HD, it's a clearer image, but it's still exactly the same image. With a computer, you get more image. We always used to use rows and columns in Excel. You know, with a standard monitor, you can see to row F. You get a bigger monitor, you can see to row J. You get a really big monitor, you can see to row Z.
Yeah, and then you know, that's the other thing. If you've got a curved monitor, maybe you don't really want to curve your spreadsheet.
Yeah.
So you want to be well aware of what use case you're
using. And the other thing too, though, is to take in consideration is, you know, you can get a huge monitor, but if you're going to be right on top of it, how far it is away from your desk, you might go, you know, cross-eyed after a little bit, you know, fatigue on your eyes because you're so close to it. Yep. But if you can,
I just can't manage to do anything.
We're seeing that 24 inch is kind of the sweet spot. You know, between 24 and 30 is the sweet spot for standard monitors.
Yeah,
I have a 24 inch monitor. I have a pair of computer glasses. They're my bifocal prescription, but in the whole lens, and it's specifically designed to be this far away.
Mm-hmm.
I set that 24-inch monitor there. It's perfect in terms of size, distance, clarity, everything.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. What's up, Dennis?
Well, I'm at the... I clicked on the link that Steve put up for the Microsoft Security Critical Update, but, man, I can't see where the heck you download the update. The page is extremely long, and I'm just not finding anything here to where to find the download. I go to Microsoft Update. There's a link that says Microsoft Update Service, and a warning comes up from Firefox saying, detected a potential security threat and did not continue to fe2.update.microsoft.com. So I'm not sure what to do.
Well,
yeah, let me look down through the rest of this. It's it says use your update service.
That's where I got that warning from Firefox.
Yeah, it says your connection is not private.
Oh, did the cert expire? I ran into, because it's first of the year, I've run into several companies whose web certification expired in like 12/31 or 1/1, and they hadn't renewed it yet.
So can I just go ahead and do it? Ignore the warning?
Well, as long as you're absolutely certain you're going to Microsoft's website, then yes.
Well, it's the link that's on the knowledge page that...
yeah. Well, yes. And yes, just check that link as you go to it. And
Oh, my God. The Microsoft Root Security Certificate is not trusted.
Oh, my Lord. Seriously?
Gotta love that company.
Yeah.
Well, it's not even letting me... Firefox is not even letting me...
Yeah. I have a way to view the certificates. So the Microsoft Root Security Authority 2011... which is supposed to expire in 2036, is not trusted. So they revoked their root certificate. So the certificate that update server is using is using an untrusted certificate authority.
Okay, so now
so
I'm
why
at...
Why is it?
Yeah. Now I got into onto that Microsoft page, and it says Windows Update FAQs. So I'm still not... seeing where the heck I get that critical update from.
You're supposed to get it right from update.microsoft.com.
To use this site, you must be running Microsoft Internet Explorer 5 or later.
Yeah, I get the same thing.
So part of the problem is that the article that we posted is from 2013, because that's when the vulnerability occurred. Let's see if we can find a better link to find that download.
Okay, I'm going to get out of there.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be automatically installed in your computer. If you go to Windows Update, you may have to go to Optional Updates.
Yeah, okay. Check under Updates, under Optional Updates, and see if it's listed there. It should be MS-13-098.
All right, now you're talking about on a website or on my computer?
In the computer itself, under your Microsoft Updates.
Okay.
Try that.
All right.
I'm going to remove that link temporarily until I find a better one.
Yeah. Well, it may be that you there isn't a better one.
That could be, too, yeah.
Right. So, anyway, try that.
Okay, it's not immediately giving me updates because it's scanning for new updates. So, okay. View optional updates. Let's see.
Right. And it may have been updated for you already, so you might have to go into the installed updates, too.
Okay, and am I looking for a KB number for that update?
I believe it's MS-13-098.
Please give me that again. I'm sorry. KB what?
MS-13-098.
That's the security bulletin.
Right. If you don't see that, then it would be a KB number, but I'm not seeing which KB number.
289-3294.
Yeah, there it is.
Is the knowledge base article.
283-294? Well, all right, I'll look around a little more, and maybe if you guys come up with something better.
We'll find a better link, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks.
Sorry about that.
Can't have everything right at our fingertips.
Yeah, unfortunately. I'm not actually running Windows, so I don't see... And yeah, you're right. This is just pages and pages and pages of what's wrong and how it's wrong and nothing about how to fix it. Excellent. Good
choice.
Well,
that's like the same problem that I ran into. There was pages and pages, you know, and people posting different comments and all that, that this is broken, but Microsoft didn't offer any workaround or solution to correct the issue. But yet... they turn the feature off.
Right.
And leave everybody hanging. And it's like, I'm sorry. It's been in there for decades. It worked with the original Windows 10. What's wrong with still keeping it going?
Yep. The update is number 289-3294. That number in Bayonne, 289-3294. It may not be in Windows 10. They're listing every version of Windows except 10. I don't know if that's because when this...
the patch is already...
the article was written in 2013.
Yeah, so there wasn't a thing. So it may be that anyway, take a look. See what happens. I got nothing else to say. Yeah, but that's that particular critical update right there. It's
in fact, that's the IT professional bulletin, because the home user bulletin has been removed from Microsoft's website.
Right. Right. So, yeah. All right. That music tells us it's time to take a break. But do not go away. We've got a whole lot more sound bites coming with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and... with you. So give us a call, and we will be back shortly right here on the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, member supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. I'm sorry, with that music in the background, should be, welcome back, everybody, to the smooth groove sounds of Soundbites. For the next half hour, sit back, relax, clear your mind, and we'll groove to the tunes together.
Well, right. See, he's got...
that's all right. It's all right. But it is. It's the smooth grooving sounds of sound bites. That's right. Which one of these do I like? Oh, how about we do the iOS bug?
Oh, yeah.
Let's do that one. A security researcher has reported an iOS 15.2 bug. That's the new one, right?
Yep.
That can render an iPhone completely useless. No editorial comments there. Even after a restore, Apple apparently is aware of the bug and promised a fix in early 2022. Trevor has discovered a bug that can be exploited through the HomeKit API. An attacker exploiting the bug could use the API to change the name of a user's HomeKit devices to something extremely lengthy. The test name had 500,000 characters, which will in turn be backed up to the associated iCloud account. If the user has home devices enabled in Control Center, the iPhone will become unresponsive. Trevor says rebooting or restoring the device doesn't help as long as the user continues to sign into the same iCloud account. There are workarounds, but the only fix would be to rename the HomeKit devices using the API. Apple is aware of the issue, according to Trevor, who reported the bug in August. He then informed Apple he would be publishing the results of the finding in January 2022 and criticized Apple's lack of transparency that poses a risk to the millions of people who use Apple products in their day-to-day lives by reducing Apple's accountability and security matters. He said Apple has delayed the fix, which was originally due to arrive in December, until early 2022. While it may seem like a far-fetched case, Trevor warns that the issue raises the possibility of ransomware. In addition to changing the names of the user's HomeKit devices, he also paints a picture where an attacker could also send invitations to a home containing malicious data to users, even if they don't have a HomeKit device. He purports that an attacker could use email addresses resembling Apple services or HomeKit products to trick less tech-savvy users, or even just those who are curious, into accepting the invitation and then demand payment via email in return for fixing the issue. Trevor outlines how to fix the issue by restoring the iPhone without signing into the same iCloud account, then signing in after setup and immediately disabling the home switch. He also recommends removing home shortcuts from the control center. So do you have home devices? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. I don't know how many people have home devices, but Apple home devices, but I suspect it's a significant number.
Yeah. So your phone or your iPad can be a home controller, but if you have the HomePod speakers, or if you have Apple TV, can be a home device. Pretty much any of the Apple peripherals can be a home device that then allows you to control those devices with Siri on your phone. So
right.
you can say, you know, I'm sorry, I said the S word. What was the?
It's Alaska.
Alaska for A. What do we have for the G and the S?
I don't know.
I don't remember what the other ones are. You say S word.
The S word.
S word. Play this music on this HomePod, and it will.
Right.
And if you
I want to watch such and so on my TV.
Right. And you can get home-enabled outlets and lights and garage door openers. So all the home automation stuff can be automated with Apple's HomeKit, as well as Zigbee and some of the other home automation product. My air conditioner, had to buy a new air conditioner last summer. It has Wi-Fi and HomeKit built in.
Wow.
So after I go to bed, and I forget, I turn forget to turn the air conditioner off. I can turn it off when I'm in bed.
Nice.
Control device trigger words.
Yeah.
Right. Right. The big thing is that all this home automation stuff, the Internet of Things, or IoT as they call it, was set up just the way the original internet was, with no consideration for security. Most IoT devices are wide open to the world, which makes them easier to set up, easier to use for the
user
average home person. Yeah, I get that. I do get that. The problem is there are a lot of bad guys out there.
Yeah.
And again, you may think nobody's going to want to take over my network. They don't know you. They don't care about you. It's an automated system. It's all being done by bots. It's all programmed. If they find you are vulnerable, they will take you over. If it turns out they can't get anything from you, they move on, but you're already infected.
Mm-hmm.
So the next time you use something that they like, they'll come in, you know, go to your bank.
Well, like I say, one of the biggest things is a lot of them just mining your email addresses.
That's right.
If they can get a hold of your email address book and suck that off, they've now got probably on the average of probably a couple hundred. And if you multiply that times, you know, millions of people, now they can turn around and sell those email lists to spammers. So then all of a sudden you can wind up getting all this junk mail, say, from car dealers just because, you know, that's what you happen to be looking at. And all of a sudden they're selling the list off to all folks looking at car deals or whatever.
So one of the things, one of the things you can do to help mitigate this issue a little bit is put your Internet of Things, your automation devices, on your guest network. So they can still see the Internet, but they can't see each other. And theoretically, they can't see your main network. So someone can't use your smart light bulb as a breach to get in and steal your computer data, which has happened.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But also it makes it harder for you to control it from your devices.
Well, most of the time, the app on your device is looking on the Internet anyway.
Right.
Because you're not at home.
Right.
So it can be done, and one of the things that one of the reasons this is happening is the companies that are making the really cheap devices are using the cheapest chips they can, which have little or no security built in.
Right.
Because that makes them cheap. That's why you can buy a smart light bulb for $5.
Right. Also, let us remember, when you set up your network, your router, you do have a choice of two networks. You want an internal network with a very strong password, and you want a guest network with a strong, different password. Because if you've used the same password on both networks, then you have not secured either network. I'm sorry, you just have not.
Yep.
So be aware that that's important. I have had people come over and want to connect to our network, and I give them the guest password, which is nothing like my regular password, and the name of the network is not anything like my regular network.
Mm-hmm.
So they can connect, but they can't get into my stuff.
Not that they would necessarily try, but it's nice to know they can't.
I expect them to try. Yeah. I know they're not going to try.
Yeah.
That's not the point.
Yep.
It's just for your own peace of mind.
Right.
Now, Apple's got something neat where you can share. If you're already on the network, you can share the password to someone else you're physically near without knowing the password and without them knowing the password.
Nice.
Because you're already on it.
Right, right, right.
So that means that person can't give the password to somebody else.
So you're sharing a token which cannot be passed on.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you know.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you tell someone your guest password is guest 1234. They go and tell everyone they know. And
right. That's the other thing. Yeah. When I give someone my guest password, I then change it.
Yeah.
When they leave, because that's the way I was. That's the way I always did.
Yeah.
That's
how you keep a network safe.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, how many security breaches are caused by someone hasn't changed the Joomla website password in 6 years since the guy that was working on it left?
Or worse, it's the default password.
Yeah.
You know, if you've just
that
set up a router.
Breach, wasn't it?
What?
The Xperion breach
yes.
was the default password on an Apache web service.
Yes. If you've just set up a router on your network, I certainly hope you changed the admin password. If you did not, you should be running to your computer right now.
It is nice that most routers are now coming with a random password that's printed on the router, which is a little better than every router password being admin.
Right. Yeah.
But if someone has physical access to your router to see what the password written there is, you have more problems than that.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So I'm always going to customers' houses and needing to, you know, change something on the router. We added a printer. I need to know the Wi-Fi password. We don't know. Well, let's log into the router. What's the router password? We don't know. All right, let's go see if it's printed on the router. It is. All right, we're in.
Exactly.
Well, that's what I did is I took and printed up a label and put it on my Orbi.
Yep.
And, you know, I've written it down, of course, too. But, again, it's right there just in case.
Right.
I need it. And, yeah, you don't want it password or, you know, blank or all that 1234567.
My wife really gets angry with me because most of my passwords are 64 characters or more.
Mm-hmm.
And she likes passwords that are significantly shorter.
Four-letter passwords?
Yeah, three, two is fine, you know.
No,
she doesn't go that far. But she does prefer shorter than 64 characters, let's put it that way. And that's why, you know, horse battery staple thingy is good, because it's XKD.
Yeah, there's the Linux interface, and then there's the comic strip.
Right, right.
XKCD.
XKCD is the comic strip, and Randall Monroe put out a cartoon that said your best kinds of passwords, and he's right, are four or five words strung together with letters or punctuation in between, because you can remember horse battery staple, horse 3 battery 15 staple exclamation point much better than you can remember CJ 37 left bracket 14 elbow.
But then if you use NPass, that takes care of...
And then if you use NPass, it takes care of everything.
Just have that running down on the desktop and you, boom.
And I can share NPass with my family. Mm-hmm. So they all have all of my passwords. They only ever have to remember one.
Yep, same with me.
If and when I pass, they will have access to all of that.
Anything and everything as far as a password is in NPass for me. And all personal information, even down, because it doesn't have to just to keep track of, the passwords for logging on to the internet,
right.
But it can keep, you can set up bank account information, the account numbers and everything else.
Then there's a note field, so you can put all kinds of instructions in there.
Yeah, it's so user friendly.
Yeah, it's ridiculously good. I love
the text on the comic. Through 20 years of effort, we have successfully trained everyone to use passwords that are hard for humans to remember, but easy for computers to guess.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So I've written a Python program that takes it. The dictionary, mm-hmm. Every Linux machine has a dictionary, hundreds of thousands of words, randomly pulls X number of words out, intersperses them with random punctuation and numbers, and there's a password. It doesn't get any easier than that.
No.
And I can just copy and paste that into any field I want, including NPass.
Yep. And somebody said once, well, I'll never be able to remember that. Well, that's the point. You don't have to.
Right, right.
And then kind of the corollary is, even with a gun to your head, you can't give them the password.
That's right. It's 64
characters. Let's hope it doesn't come to that.
I don't remember. Right, right, right. But yeah, so I put all my passwords in NPass, and then there's a copy button.
Yep.
That copies it to the clipboard. I then paste it into whatever website I'm at, or I let NPass do it directly.
Got it on my phone.
Yeah.
So he sits there and...
Well, and that's the other thing. It's your phone, your tablet, your desktop, your laptop, all of them. If you put the... and it is an encrypted file. So if you tell it to save that encrypted file to, say, Google Drive or wherever, I mean, there's like 15 options, then you can access it from any device anywhere.
Yep.
So it works really, really well. And then you only have to ever remember... one password.
Master password. Yep. And then even once it's running, it runs down on the desktop, and you pull it up, and you can set it up so you can just put in a PIN number. And I can just put in my PIN number,
and
boom,
PIN
pops
number.
Back up.
And in fact, I'm running it on my Chromebook.
Yep.
On the Linux side. I'm running NPass there. And for those of you who keep a notebook with all your passwords in it, and still have passwords from 2011 or 1811, you find that when you keep them in NPass, you just overwrite the old one, so you don't have to go through 40 or 50 passwords. And why does everybody start at the beginning of the book?
Mm-hmm.
Start at the end of the book. That's where the new ones are.
Cross off the ones that don't work.
It's not a murder mystery. You can start at the end.
And work your way backwards.
Right.
I got mad when Apple's password manager keychain used to count how many passwords you had.
Yeah.
And I was over 600 and quite pleased. Then they stopped counting them. Why?
Yeah, I know. NPass still does. It tells you all kinds of information, which I really, really like, by the way. It tells you the desktop version tells you how many passwords you've got, dashboard. How many are, what I love about it is it tells you if they are compromised passwords.
Yep. Yes.
I keep
a lot of password managers have added that feature.
Have added that feature.
From Troy Hunt.
Right. I keep one password which actually doesn't connect to anything so that I can show people. You know, when I've got my laptop up, I'll bring it up and I'll say, look, it even tells you this is a bad password. Stop using it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll suggest the password. It'll generate a password.
And the bad guys know about putting an at sign for an A and a zero for an O. That's not
a lot of that stuff they've already figured out. A five instead of an S.
Yep.
You know, I mean, a three instead of an E. You know, I mean,
it's leet speak, and they all know it.
Yeah, it's not hard to figure out, and especially if they put it on a computer and tried to do the cracking.
Oh, there's a new password at the top of the bad password list.
Oh, yeah?
The number one has been password for many years in a row.
Yes.
Last year, it was picture one.
Picture one?
Yeah.
Picture one?
Apparently, yeah.
How weird is that?
Yeah, according to Nord Security.
Ah, Nord. And the Nord VPN people.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just.
I think number three is 123456. In fact, there was so 123456 is a common one, but now many sites are requiring more characters. So 123456789 is now a common password.
And this is what annoys me is when I put in one of my very secure passwords and it comes back and says you've exceeded the maximum.
Yep.
Okay. First, tell me what the maximum is.
Yeah.
You know, it's
and why is there a maximum?
And why is there a maximum? Yeah. That's a separate issue. It's because it's still an old COBOL program. That's why.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah,
we only allocated the 32-bit word for this password field. You jerk.
But yet it's a bank, and they need to.
Why do you need 140 word characters in your password? I don't need it. I want it.
Yeah,
that's a different story.
Yeah.
I'm worried about security. You should be, too.
Right. The thing about NPass and many of the others is they'll also tell you if you've reused the password.
Yeah.
One thing I hate, I ran into this week with a customer, is we're trying to log into one of their services. The password they have isn't working. All right, so let's reset the password. We pass the security via a verification. I enter a new password in for them, and it says you can't use the same password. That was the password you said was wrong.
Yeah.
And I was trying to make it easy for the customer because that's what they thought the password was. Apparently it was.
Apparently it was, yeah.
And I typed it wrong four times in a row.
Oh, there you go.
No. Apple does that on the Apple ID. You can't use the same password you've used in the last year.
Right.
So maybe that was 6 months ago password when you wrote it down in your book and it didn't cross it off when you changed it.
I worked at a bank, and they continually changed the rules because people found ways around them.
Yeah.
So you couldn't use the same password you used in a year. Okay, January, February.
Yep.
And because you had to change it every month. So then they said you can't use the last 13 passwords, and you have to change them every 28 days. So people would say, password 01, password 02. Okay, you can't use sequential numbers. We'll remember those. You can't use a number at the... I mean, by the time we were done, it was a page and a half of what you can't do with your password. And people were still finding ways around it.
Oh, yeah.
On a Security Now episode, Steve Gibson was talking about he was at a coffee shop one day and overheard someone at another table. So you go, I hate this password policy my company makes you do. You have to change your password. You can't use the same password you did the last six times. So I just changed my password seven times in a row and make it back to the
what
I want it to be.
Well, and that was one of the rules. You can't change the password twice in a row.
Within a certain number of days,
you have to wait some days. It just people will do whatever they can to avoid being secure, and but that's not.
I'm sorry, see?
That's not the thing we want. We don't want you to not be secure.
Yeah, and it's almost never your end that gets hacked.
Right,
it's the other end, and so some company gets breached. Yeah. They lose all of the passwords. So that simple password you used is now public knowledge. And that's where the list of known passwords come from, is the good guys looking through that list of known passwords. Okay. Because you know the bad guys are already.
Yep.
That's, yeah.
What? But yeah, so, yes. And so you want passwords that are unique on every one of your websites.
We're up to 12 billion pwned accounts and lost passwords. Nearly 11.7 billion lost accounts.
With a B. Billion, yep. With a B.
That was a gentleman calling for with a request.
For the polka guys?
No, music.
Yeah.
I says, no, this is soundbite. Oh, you're right. You're on? I go, no, we're just about going off. We've been on since noon.
Yeah.
And we
got fine German music coming up next.
Yeah. That's right. But it is a pre-recorded program, so calling in won't work for that one either. But yeah, yeah, you're right. There are 11 billion with a B stolen accounts and passwords. If you're using one of those passwords, you can easily be owned. Because you think, well, how long will it take to go through 11 billion passwords? For a computer? Not that long.
No.
Because they're all just in a list. It just goes down through the list. This one, this one, this one, this one, this one.
Oh,
a million and a half a second.
I once wrote a program to count to a million. And I had it display the numbers as it counted them. It took a really long time. Then I took that display the numbers off, and it as soon as I hit return, it was done.
Yeah.
It took a couple of seconds.
Yeah, the longest part of a program is printing to the screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was printing as fast as it could. It
takes up the cycle times on the CPU.
Right.
Whereas if it can just do the math off, you know, because it's like a calculator. You don't see it doing the math when you sit there and ask it to multiply and then divide.
Right.
It happens in the background.
Right. Steve Gibson has a
password haystacks.
Password haystack. GRC.com. If you go to GRC.com and look under services, you'll find his password haystack. And you can type in a password, which goes nowhere, so nobody else gets it. But it'll tell you if you don't have uppercase, you don't have lowercase, you don't have digits, you don't have symbols. And then it will tell you whatever password you type in, how long it takes to crack that password. Yeah. What'd you say the current pass picture one?
Yeah, all lowercase.
Picture and the number one?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it will take us, a cracking array will do it in 0.029 seconds. 0.029 seconds.
Yeah. So faster than you can hit return.
Right. Except that it will even be faster than that.
Yeah.
Because people know that's the number one password, and so they'll try it first.
Yeah, they'll try those 11 million lost account passwords first.
I had someone who once asked me, they wanted to set their password, and I said, you can't, you know, what do you want the password to be? A. No. No. Your password cannot be A. That's the very first password that will be tested with an automated password program. Okay, make it Z. No.
That's the 26th password that we'll share.
That is no better. But people don't want long passwords.
Yep.
All right.
So don't make them complex. Use four words. Four words that you know. That's a long password. That's probably pretty good.
That's exactly right. And intersperse that with numbers and punctuation.
Yep.
All right. We are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. You really have to call earlier. The problem is we're done. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray for their amazing knowledge and persistence at doing this for some reason. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, it's Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that with your generous support, we continue to be member-supported. Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.